Welcome to episode 494 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a fascinating conversation with poet, author, activist, and educator Leslie Ann Brown. She speaks with us from her home in Copenhagen, Denmark. We talk about her background, colonialism, Turtle Island, James Baldwin, Toni Morrison, being a caretaker of culture. We talk about her book, Decolonial Daughter, and her new memoir, Black Girl on Mars, The Creation of Whiteness, The History of Terror, Eurocentric Fundamentalism, and being kind to yourself, among other things. A grand conversation with Leslie Ann Brown this go-round. We also have an EW essay titled Backside, and we share a piece published in Harper's Magazine's October 2022 issue titled Minor Marginalia, Writing Left Behind by Visitors at the Oakland Public Library. And we have a poem called Lively Up. All of this, of course, will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Episode 494 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Opportunity is knocking at your door. Opportunity, it knocks but once and don't come back no more. So grab it in the night, grab it in the day, or grab it right now or it might get away. You better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away. Grab it in the east, grab it in the west, and grab it in the place you hold it best. You better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away. You better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away. Grab it up high, grab it down low, grab it real tight, don't let it go. You better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away. That you like a lot, you better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away. So grab it in the morning, grab it in the night. Well, hold it, baby, and hold it tight. You better snatch and grab it, snatch and grab it. Better snatch and grab it before it gets away.
Backside deep pockets and water sockets. Humming wife in the kitchen, Tchaikovsky resonating from the banyu. Lady bird singing afternoon songs that echo somewhere far from here, amplified by an earth-laden canyon of clay, reddish-brown, with volcanic ash on top of which sets a glorious arrangement of structure and cobblestone streets, not much different than your hometown. Its people, special places, and nuanced history of valuable things. Who has them? How they were struggled for? What deals and dishonesty opened coveted doors into privilege, position, and more and more and more? I was running through the few streets of my mountaintop village. It was very early in the morning. The stars and moon crescent still shined bright, and the orange-yellow sun was just starting to peek up from the valley east. I turned up a hill, and just as I straightened my gait, several deer in the dark lightness ran across the road just in front of my pathway and back towards the woods through a few yards with the white fur of each backside prominent, poised and true. I looked to the rising sun and crescent moon, the starscape and smell of chilled morning dew, creating alive, old and new.
Thank you.
Hello, Leslie Ann Brown. Is that you?
That's right. Hello, EW.
Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock On Tours.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Before we get started, let me share a little bit of background with the listeners. Leslie Ann Brown is a mother, a poet, an author, an activist, an educator. She's originally from Brooklyn, New York, and having lived in Copenhagen, Denmark for the past 20 years, Leslie Ann has made impactful contributions towards intercultural mutual comprehension through her writing and activism. Among the many projects Leslie Ann has been involved, some of them include being a co-creator of Say It Loud Poetry Collective, which built an intercultural poetry platform and performed throughout Copenhagen, Denmark. She was the national spokeswoman for the Women's March in 2017. Leslie Ann co-produced and hosted the first ever Women of Color panel in Denmark. She really made a name for herself through her blog called Black Girl on Mars, created in 2007. Black Girl on Mars is about forging a space for oneself in otherwise alien terrain and inspiring others to do the same. In her 2017 book, Decolonial Daughter, she explores, through the lens of motherhood, issues such as migration, identity, gender, nationhood, and how it relates to land, forced migrations, imprisonment, and genocide. She has an upcoming memoir titled Black Girl on Mars, scheduled for release in February 2023. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is very happy to have on the program Leslie Ann Brown. Again, thank you for taking time out. And we're talking with you while you sit in your place in Denmark, right?
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. I'm in Copenhagen at the moment.
That's a long way from Brooklyn.
It is.
So how's it going? How's it going out there? Is it the same sort of weather as here? We're just in the middle of autumn.
Yes, yes. It's the temperature is definitely dropping. You can feel it, but it's pretty much the same, I think. I would gather.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with that part of the world, Scandinavia. I've been wanting to go there for years.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your background. You know, I mean, I know your parents were, they emigrated here, right, from the Caribbean.
That's correct. Trinidad and Tobago, yes.
And were they just, like most immigrants, looking for a better life?
I think that's probably, yes, the superficial side of it. I think also, well, my father was a musician. And I think they were also greatly impacted by colonialism into thinking that that they actually had to migrate if they had been given the opportunity to do so, which of course they had been. So I think that's, colonialism and internalizing that colonialism definitely informed that decision to leave their motherland and move to Turtle Island, as we call it.
Turtle Island, yeah. I've heard it referred to as Turtle Island by indigenous folks that I've had on the program, you know, indigenous to this continent, which we call America.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And are you talking about when you said, you know, being sort of influenced by the colonial mentality that if, you know, you want to live well, you want to live better, you have to leave where you are and go to, you know, the West?
Absolutely. Yes, that mentality that is sort of... especially in their time period, I could imagine it was definitely more impactful. And this idea that moving to the U.S. was, there is something to be said about the opportunities for what, though, the opportunities to, become more middle class, the opportunities to become what we refer to as American, the opportunities for that social mobility that they perhaps did not feel that they had. In Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, my father and mother are immigrants, and from Europe, from Italy, and I know my father, he oftentimes would reflect when he was, you know, in his 30s and such, 40s, saying, I don't know why I came here. You know, it was much better where I was.
Exactly. It's a programming.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's a rat race here. And I think some folks that come from beautiful villages, towns, what have you, then they get caught up in the rat race here. And they're like, my gosh, what did I leave behind? For what?
Yes, absolutely.
Anyhow, some of your influences as a writer, I know James Baldwin comes up. Oftentimes you're referred to as the James Baldwin of Scandinavia. And others, I'm sure, they're probably a long list. Do you want to share some of your influences? And maybe they're not just writers, of course.
Yeah, well, my influences are many, many. I would in a way be so bold to say that it's almost everything I come into contact with. I read across all genres. I particularly like nature and science writing. I love literature, and for me, the point of literature is actually to get into the experiences of others. So I've always read literature coming from different cultures and different cultures and countries. I've never did just one thing. I really like to follow what interests me at the time, like whatever it is I'm percolating in my brain. So it's kind of hard to say, and being compared to James Baldwin, for example, I by no means want to put myself on the same level as he and his work. And also, I actually refer to him in my upcoming, I have a line where I refer to him as a Saint Baldwin, because he has achieved this sort of, religious-like status for many of us, not religious, but I should say spiritual, because I like to stay away from religion.
Saint Baldwin, is that? Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I when he speaks, when I read some of the things that he's written, it's he's so spot on and so ahead of so many other people.
Yes. Absolutely.
He was touched, you know, in a way, I think.
Yes. And he gave us, like, you know, Giovanni's Room, which is like one of my top 10 all-time favorite books. I mean, the queerness of that novel for the time. I mean, that's just so groundbreaking.
Yeah. I have that book. I haven't read it yet. And I read about it. That's why I bought it.
Brilliant.
Is it?
Yes. It's one of my favorites. Yes.
And again, as you said, as it addresses being a gay man, I guess, primarily.
Yes. And they're not even any, the main characters aren't even black.
Well, he was probably in Europe when he wrote it too, right? At that point?
Yes, absolutely. But still, I mean, it's still worthy to kind of imagine that he wrote a book that did not, center black characters. I still think that's really out of this world in a positive way.
How so?
I don't think many black writers, because I feel that first of all, you know, black literature, like, it's sort of Toni Morrison. I look at Toni Morrison as this writer who came along to sort of nurse us in a way that we needed to be nursed literarily. And when I say us, primarily black and brown people, but also the whole world, because our literature, there was so much room for different types of literature. So she came and she fulfilled that, and she gave us these black characters, and she gave us these black experiences, and she gave us these black stories. And I understand that care as a black writer that you would approach that task with. So saying that, for a black writer of Baldwin's time to actually step out of that role of being also a caretaker of culture is a bold and brave move, and he pulled it off.
He did. He did.
Yes.
And when you're saying a caretaker of culture, I'm thinking you mean a caretaker of the culture in the United States as a whole. And
yes, and the world, because we're also world. Part of the world. Yes, I mean, we're definitely not an island unto ourselves, although we like to pretend that we are.
Well, yeah, we really, just when you look at how we don't know geography, it speaks volumes.
I belong to that club.
Yeah.
Except I know that Denmark is not, I know Copenhagen is not in Holland.
Yeah, right. A lot of people do not. You're right. Yeah, I had a guest on the show last week, and he was talking with me from Detroit. He was in a hotel room in Detroit, and he said, "I'm standing in this hotel room looking at Canada," and I was totally mm-hmm. perplexed. "And what do you mean you're looking at Canada? You can see Canada mm-hmm. from Detroit?" And he said, "Yeah, yeah." And I felt like a moron, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyhow,
I hear that.
So when you get more into what you've been working on in terms of writing, I mean, I looked at the list of events that you've been involved in. There's so many. You've been doing so much connecting and talking with folks about your experiences as a human being, as a woman, as a mother, as a person of color, among other things. And you know, you wrote a book back in 2017, Decolonial Daughter. And tell us a bit about what that book is supposed to maybe resonate, what you tried to communicate in it.
Excellent. Well, I wanted it to sort of remedy. I work as an educator here in Denmark, and there's this, by now, what I call a willful ignorance of Denmark and, by extension, Europe's complicity in race and racism, the enslavement of Africans, white settlerism. So I sort of wrote that book as an antidote for that, or to that, as a remedy, to remedy that. So these gaps, these things that are missing in the education of a typical Dane, they can find a lot of it in that one book. And of course, the subtitle of the book is Decolonial Daughter, Letters from a Black Woman to Her European Son. And actually, what I do in that title, you're also from Brooklyn, right?
Our radio. Well, I'm not from Brooklyn per se. My show is on Radio Free Brooklyn. That's my home station.
Okay, excellent.
I'm from not far from there, in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, that's what they call that, like another borough, right? That's like the sixth borough.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Right.
But when I was a kid, you know, we would say when you son someone, you basically put that person in their place, like to son someone. That was like the slang. So in my title, so the joke, you know, my joke to myself, and I chuckle every time I read that title, is that I am sunning Europe, because Europe, whatever Europe has, whatever wealth Europe has, comes from the wealth of Africa and also the what we call the global South.
Right, because of the work, the labor. Is that what you mean? The free.
The resources, the labor, everything.
And
everything.
The resources, right?
Even the knowledge.
Well, yeah.
You know, one can argue. It's like, you know, they like to say Greek, but when you look at where did ancient Greece get its knowledge from? And they say Africa, but then they say Egypt and North Africa. There, you know, there's always this hesitancy to humanize or to really truly engage with the knowledge and the depth of culture that actually comes out of the continent of Africa.
I cannot disagree with you. And I have to say too, that because of that fact, most of us don't realize. So what Africa has given us.
Right. And continues to.
Right. And continues to, you know,
yeah.
There are realities. And I think this is what Baldwin did so brilliantly. There are realities because of our behavior over thousands of years of where we are today as a species, and a lot of it, you know, is broken down based on physical differences and geographic differences. But at the same time, we're all human, and we're not different ideally or, you know, objectively until you look at how we've practiced, you know, how we actually went through the day to day from year to year over human history. And that's the part that always, I think, perplexes me the most. You know, how do you connect those two? You know, we are all the same, but we're not, because of the way we treat each other and the way we look at each other.
Well, I think it's really important to to have at the forefront to reckon with the fact that you know, and this is not an original thought. Dr. John Henry Clark says this, and many others, that the only original idea to come out of Europe is race and racism. And race and racism was constructed for a reason. And until we deconstruct that and abolish this hierarchical structure that our whole Western culture has been built upon, and which is in actuality destroying us, we will just continue running over that cliff towards our own destruction. I mean, that's what's happening. It's a mindset that has been cultivated. This idea, you know, it's always funny when you hear these, you know, America, which is a European white settler concoction, you know, talking about spreading democracy, or any other EU country spreading democracy, when, I mean, historically, the royal families in Europe, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. It's really interesting. And then, you know, the whole creation of whiteness, and, you know, you talk about your some of your lineage coming from Italy. You know, I remember being in high school, I used to go to Washington Irving, which is a predominantly black high school at the time that I attended. And I remember my Spanish teacher, Mr. Fantacci was his name. And he was so mad at us one day because we were, you know, rambunctious kids. And he would tell us, he's like, you know, when I was a kid, no one invited me to their parties because I was Italian. You know, he was right? In his generation. He was older at the time. But now, you know, an Italian American, or even the Irish, who, you know, became white also very recently. I mean, you know, it's deep and it's heavy, and we need to confront ourselves, all of us. We're all complicit. I don't think, you know, anyone is free from this, you know, virus in our part of the world. And we need to destroy it.
Right. We do, because becoming white means you have to give up something maybe that is uniquely you otherwise. That, you know, you have to buy into
it's
that.
It's uniquely human. To become white is to become unhuman. That's what I would suggest.
Yeah.
You know, it's really... The Native American poet John Trudell, he tells the story about when the first European came, let's say Columbus, and Columbus came upon, you know, an indigenous person. I think it was Hispaniola. I forget what was the first country he landed in. And Columbus says, well, what are you? And then the person indigenous to that place says, which is by... interestingly enough, my ancestors, right? Carib. So when Columbus says, what are you? And then they say, well, we're human. Trudell says that Columbus and his people at that point in history had no idea what it meant to be human, because Europe had historically dehumanized her people through the Inquisition, right? Through the witch burning, there's a history of terror that happened in Europe that's a precursor to the terror that Europeans unleashed on the rest of the world.
Yes. Yes, definitely. I love it. I love the knowledge and the passion you're sharing with us right here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours right now. Leslie Ann Brown, poet, author, activist, educator, mother, among other things. You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. Now, where do I go? I had so many questions based on what you just shared. Well, let's go back to some of the particulars of your first, I guess it's your first book that we're talking about. When Decolonial Daughter, you mentioned migration, you know, and motherhood being an issue, identity, gender, nationhood, and how it relates to land, forced migrations. You could run with any of this as you like, imprisonment, genocide. All of these are themes that that you talk about in your 2017 book, Decolonial Daughter. In what way are you delving into these? They're all bad things,
well,
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, so these ideas I further develop in my upcoming book, which is Black Girl on Mars. So I can say it comes under the umbrella. There was a Danish Palestinian poet who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. His name was Yahya Hassan, and he said a term. I don't know if it's his originally, but it sort of really sums it up, and he calls it Eurocentric fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. So we all live under the system of Eurocentric fundamentalism. We've all been educated under this idea that whatever is European, that's the pinnacle of civilization, and everything outside of that is the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. So that, of course, is a farce. And part of, you know, Eurocentric fundamentalism would be the COVID response, for example, but let the weak perish and the strong survive, right? Mm-hmm. Eurocentric fundamentalism is invading Libya and leaving it in the state that we have left it in that facilitates a modern day slavery. Eurocentric fundamentalism is Israel doing what the state of Israel, Zionism, doing what it's doing to its indigenous Palestinian populace. Eurocentric fundamentalism is, Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck for the length of time that he did and murdering him on TV and having it seen globally. So we are under a regime of Eurocentric fundamentalism that clogs our borders and tell indigenous people who we now have, now who we call, you know, Mexican or Guatemalan or Honduras, you know, we give these labels because, you know, Eurocentric fundamentalism has also created these nation states. Eurocentric fundamentalism is what bombs Iraq and, calls, you know, the many lives that were lost. Collateral damage. Eurocentric fundamentalism is what George Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden, all Eurocentric fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's about.
Wow. So you're identifying a history, a thread, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And do you think we could transcend it? Do you think we could, as a species, nationally, globally,
better? Yes, yes. But it would take the dismantling of governments and corporations, and we would have to return. You know, there has to be more of a balance between. I mean, okay. So I'll give you an example, right? Right before the pandemic hit, I remember reading that we're going to, by the year 2032, maybe not even that far, I think the year that the mark has already passed where there are more humans living in urban areas than ever before, right? There's this statistic, right? So then the pandemic hit, and logically, anyone with a brain would be like, okay, but living in urban area in densely populated urban areas facilitates the spread of viruses, right?
Right.
So why are we not making a concerted effort to deconcentrate these urban, what does it seem to be an economic impulse? Why are we being forced to, in a way, move into urban areas due to our economic system? Because that's what's happening. When we are in densely populated urban settings, we're also greatly harming nature. We're greatly, you know, there's a greater imbalance between us and, you know, the wider, because we are in nature. You know, why are we insisting on, I'm not anti-technology, right?
Right.
But in a way, I feel like we're definitely in this realm of techno-fascism that we really need to think about and calm down on it a little bit, because what are we in a rush for? I don't really understand it. So Bezos could make more money? Like, why are we in such a rush?
Is that the techno-fascism? You know, we're all kind of being ruled and directed by a few people via the internet and you know, being told what is popular, what we should purchase, and making it easy for us to connect and stay disconnected from everything else. Is that what you mean by kind of?
I do, but I want to be careful because I don't want to suggest, like, Jeff Bezos, for instance. Do I think, or even Elon Musk, do I think, like, they're, like, purposely engineering this? I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I do think what is the case is that we do have a mindset where hoarding large amounts of money is celebrated in our culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are of a certain personality type and you have access to hoarding large amounts of wealth, you're going to do that by any means necessary, especially if that means it's facilitated by our laws and our governments and our states. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it allows those people to rise.
Right. So I think that we are the majority. So right before COVID hit, globally, we had the, like, you know, record demonstrations and protests all over the world. Like, I think the numbers were sort of like of the type that were never seen before. And then the pandemic hit. So there's not so much resistance that's going on globally at the moment. But, you know, I mean, it's about people power. I write about this this great story that I was told by Rebel Diaz. It's about this this activist called Victor Toro, who was from Chile, and he had to flee Chile during the dictatorship, the overthrow of the government that the U.S. government,
mm-hmm.
Of course, supported. And but anyway, it's in the book, and the whole point is it is people power.
Yeah.
And in order for the people power to really be effective, we also have to not be so human centric, because that's another thing, because there are different types of oppressions, right? So one of the oppressions that we're also, facilitating is that of, you know, human centrism. We're like, we're putting ourselves at the pinnacle of the hierarchical structure that we love so much, this pyramid, at the expense of other living beings. And I think we need to really, move with that knowledge and not stop being so narcissistic. I talk about that too, because we live in a narcissistic culture.
Well,
it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's tons of stuff. We have to have you back on, Leslie, and we do, honestly. I'm loving this. I don't think you know the show that much, because I just reached out to you recently, having seen some of the stuff you're doing. I said, I have to have this person on the show. But a lot of the guests that I have on, we talk about these sorts of issues, you know. So I love that you're connecting and bring with some of the things we've talked about and bringing so many new insights to our program here, Troubadours and Rockets.
Thank you.
And again, I'd love to have you on again.
Absolutely.
Right now, we're just about out of time, and I want to make sure that people could reach out and maybe find your books, The Decolonial Daughter, as well as the new one coming out in February, Black Girl
That's
on
right.
Mars.
Yes.
How could people connect with you?
Well, I'm on I am on Facebook, and I'm also on Instagram, although it's private, but you can try. And I'm also on Twitter, and that's kind of private too, but you could try. But you can find my books. They're available wherever books are sold, and you just ask for them if you don't see them. And, you know, I'm just sort of like at this point right now where I'm just getting ready to run out into the countryside to write my next book. You know, that's where I'm at right now. I'm a kind of over people.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I go through those phases too. And it's a perfect time of year because we're getting in, we'll be in winter soon. And I'm sure the winters there are brilliant.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is it gorgeous out there in the wintertime?
It is. It gets pretty dark. It can get pretty dark, you know. But I mean, people think it gets really cold here, but it actually gets colder in New York, on average. Yeah, it gets dark, it gets rainy. But yeah, sometimes the sun comes out.
Well, have a good winter, and any closing thought for the masses, something to uplift perhaps, or something to make someone maybe giggle while they're listening to us, or whatever you got.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, just be gentle with yourself. We have to be gentle with ourselves. We have to be, especially on the journey of deprogramming what all that we have been programmed to believe. I think we're living in exciting times. And hold your loved ones close.
Well said. Leslie Ann Brown, a pleasure talking with you. I look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. And now, from the October 2022 issue of Harper's Magazine, this is titled Minor Marginalia. It's from Writings Left Behind by Visitors to the Oakland Public Library. Dear librarian, those three kids over there are making too much noise, and I can't read, and my friend can't do his homework. Thank you. Dear reader, I love this book. It stole my heart and made me cry. When you find tear stains, you will know they are mine. Cheyenne is mean. No, she's not, Serena. She is mean to me. Do you hate me? Not really. I hate you, but not that much. I hate you 100 times. Yep, that's right. I hate you 100 times. I hate you more than anything now. Bye-bye. You are so bad now. So long, loser. I don't want to be your friend, loser. Anger, sadness, fear, hurt, guilt. What positive thing can I learn from this to help me in the future? Hi, everybody. I am from Westlake, yo. And I write you that I am an 8th grader going my way to high school. And next, be proud of me and pray for me so I can be successful. And I am getting taller. And if you see me now, you will think I am a giraffe chewing on a tree. Fun facts. Many people wrap their sandwiches with aluminum foil. Small quantities of aluminum can be swallowed. Elderly people forget things easily because aluminum is in their brains. Mr. Poopy Loopy Stinky Butt, a.k.a. Mr. Men, number 48. Once there was a very silly-looking sort of man, and his name was Mr. Poopy Loopy Stinky Butt. And he looked like a glob of poop, and he had to roll around to get to places. And the places were covered with poop, and people stepped in poop. Yuck! It was disgusting. And everybody had to wipe their shoes on the storekeeper's face. And they threw poop at each other. And they lived happily ever after. Minor Marginalia.
Life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come love, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come love, baby.
This might be the lost, but so what's I'm begging you, save a little soul.
Come love, baby. Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
come love the baby. In walked luck and you looked in time. Never looked back, walked tall, act fine. My sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, you've got to get smart. Wish upon day, I believe, oh Lord, I believe all the way. Come, love the baby. Oh,
shadows, run for the shadows in his golden years.
There's my baby lost, that's all. Once I'm making you say for little
golden years. Come,
don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Lively up. Brown, yellow, specks of green, black. White clouds pass through endless blue. Away and to, me and you. Sweet melody of human hope, love lost and found, unending existence and life abound. Moisture in the air and down, from this nose breathed through my beard. Steer clear of nothing, despite your fear. We are still all here, my dear.
flowers bloom on a warm summer night. They'll grieve you without the bedroom light. I just want a place with you. I just want a place.
And there you have it, episode 494 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Leslie Ann Brown, Harper's Magazine, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Judith Owen, Gene Knight, Herbie Hancock, David Bowie, Adrian Lenker, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Ciao, ciao.